All right, welcome to Season 2, Episode 4 of the Retro Game Club podcast. And with me, and who is also quarantined now, is Hugh.
Yes, well, I'm playing it safe. I'm not leaving my house for the next 6 months.
Oh, yeah, and I'm pretty much just spraying my face with Lysol, and yeah. Yeah, I think you live in a more densely packed area than I do. It's more likely.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, we already have where the second confirmed case of this, whatever, this the latest virus of the week that's going to kill everybody is out here, so.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw in the news that some pediatrician with tuberculosis or pediatrician employee with tuberculosis has just been at work for months. Yeah, oh. that's in my little town. National news, my little town. Luckily, not my kid's pediatrician.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to?
So let's see. I started a new game, but I'm going to save it for my game club pick for next week, I guess. What have I been doing? Oh, so over on Limited Run Games, they did a promotion with RetroBit to do a run of these like bright pink Sega Saturn controllers. I think there was some sort of charity tie-in. And I liked the RetroBit Genesis controller. Like, it felt exactly like the original Genesis controller. So I decided to give the Saturn one a try. That just came in. And it is very, very authentic to the original Saturn controller. But the part I forgot is that the original Saturn controller is awful. And that the replacement, the thing that looks like a waffle maker, is kind of a better controller, even though you develop carpal tunnel if you play with it too long.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did use this controller. The nice thing, the thing that RetroBit does that's really good, it is with Genesis 2, is they, it's an exact perfect replica of the original controller, but they like double the cord length.
Nice. And it has a Saturn connector, the D-sub connector on it.
Yeah, they also do one with a USB connector. So cool. It was an excuse to fire up and play a little Saturn in the past week.
Nice. Yeah, they're a good company. They really are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I will I will buy every controller they make, I think, because I've been very, very happy with all of them. And if you want to play on original hardware, that's the problem, right? Like, all these old controllers are dying.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a lot of, like, really bad repro controllers. But to get something that you really... I mean, honestly, like, if you blindfolded someone and handed them the RetroBit controller, they wouldn't be able to tell you if it was, like, a clone or the original Saturn controller.
And they also make wireless controllers for the new Mini Classic systems that are better than what you get in the box.
Yeah. Yeah. We should talk to these guys or people, whatever they are. Because, yeah, their controllers are just such good quality. I haven't tried. They launched a Nintendo 64 controller recently. I haven't tried that yet. I think because I still own like a couple new Nintendo 64 controllers. So, yeah, I'm hoping they get into other systems. You know, I hope they do. I don't think they've done a Super Nintendo controller yet, but that's the one. That's the system where I'm really like running low on controllers right now.
I have their modern Super Nintendo controllers. I have like two of those.
Really? I was on their site. I don't see.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. For that one, I was thinking about 8-Bit Do.
Oh, 8-Bit Do. Yeah, yeah.
Wrong 8-Bit company.
Yeah, they have. They sell like a Mega Man branded one, but I think it's actually connects to PC maybe. Whatever. So if they make one, I will definitely get it. that's about it. Yeah, and also the Star Wars Episode I Racer remake came in, but I haven't played that yet.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, you have to let me know how that one is.
Yeah, that is. It's probably still my favorite Star Wars game.
Yeah, it's definitely up there for me.
So, what have you been up to?
Well, I finally got my Magpie subscription figured out, and I've been reading tons of those because you get the whole back catalog. It's a great magazine. And actually, the whole problem was I contacted the publisher and not the the app creator because it's an application that's a magazine. The second I got a hold of them, it was fixed. Mm-hmm. So they did great on that support. Yeah, I'm sure they run deals every year. If you find a deal, I highly recommend that magazine. A lot of good projects. There's a lot of good information in general. I picked up two of those NES controllers for the Switch. They had a deal where it was like, they were like, you get them in a pair, a box that's a pair. And it ended up being like $10 each for each controller. So it's like $20 total. So kind of like, why not at that point? Get two nice wireless NES controllers. Cool news in my life. My son is now like up, and he's almost four, is obsessed with Pac-Man. So I'm really proud of him. Mm-hmm. And he loves watching me play Pac-Man 256, and he's starting to get it and play it himself. So that's kind of fun to share with him. I'm finally entering that part of fatherhood. And the other night I watched, I don't know if you heard this about this, there's a documentary about the Power Glove called Power of Glove. It's free on Amazon to watch.
Was that like a Kickstarter, maybe?
I'm not sure, but it was pretty well done.
Okay.
It's not very long. I definitely recommend anyone who likes video games to watch it. They talk about the people who, or they interview like the hardware guy and the software guy and someone who was in charge of making the one game for it. And the funniest part is they interview the guy who had to play, I think he had to play like 600 games or something like that, and write down each way the Power Glove can work with it.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like the worst job in the history of video games. I mean,
it, listening to him talk about it, it sounded like it as well.
Yeah. So this was a Kickstarter. I seem to recall seeing the Kickstarter. I probably didn't back it because, I don't know, I try to limit myself to only a couple Kickstarters a year now.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, yeah, so yeah, successfully backed, real, yeah, it has a crew of people who actually seem to have some minimal amount of experience, and yeah, it sounds good. I do have Amazon Prime, so I should probably give this a watch.
Yeah, it's really like just something put on in the background if you want. But yeah, and tomorrow the construction, the minor construction of my basement starts, so when we record the next episode, hopefully it'll be done, but we've all seen the money pit, so we'll see how construction actually goes.
Yeah. So the Kickstarter only raised $18,000. So they obviously did an awful lot with not a lot of money. I mean, I've sort of a ballpark idea of what it costs to film something, and greater than $18,000 is what I would have imagined.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but I mean, this is, it's, you know, interviewing someone's free, but you have to travel and then you have to edit. So
yeah, the time, right? They I'm sure they put in more than $18,000 worth of work into this.
Yeah, I mean, including time, but it's like, if it's a passion project, like that's like putting a money value on this podcast. Like we spend our time on it, but I have fun with it. So,
yeah.
maybe one day we'll be on Amazon.
You could go on Amazon right now, I think.
Probably, yeah.
I know there's a very low barrier to entry in terms of getting products on Amazon.
But yeah, that's about all I have going on. Shall we dive into some news?
Yeah. Mini Sega Arcade Cabinet. So this is a DIY project. I almost used the wrong acronym. I was going to invent a new one. I was hoping this was a thing you could buy, because I would buy this.
This is on Adafruit, and if you click on the first or second link in Adafruit, it brings you to a Thingiverse type walkthrough on how to do this. And there's links in here to Thingiverse too. I can't tell if I think you 3D print some of this and maybe cut the rest. It's a bar top cabinet for Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks really, really cool. I mean, I would definitely enjoy having one of these, but I don't know how to 3D print or cut. So if they could mass produce these, you know, do a Kickstarter and make like 1,000 of these, I would probably be inclined to buy one.
Oh, totally. And one cool thing that you can't see from the small picture is for people who can't see this because you're using your ears right now. Yeah, it looks like a bar top, you know, with one stick and six buttons and, you know, start button and stuff like that. It almost looks like a candy cab, right? But the part that you can't tell from the small picture is there's actually two LCD screens, a 10-inch main LCD screen And then at the top, that's a tiny LCD screen for like instructions or a marquee or whatever you want to do with it. So that's a nice little touch. So if any of our listeners builds this, please send us some photos. Let us know.
Let's see. I would do a 32X themed one and turn it into a 32X cabinet. That's what I would like.
That's actually a really good idea.
So we talked about text adventures on our last episode, and there is a text adventure game creation jam going on right now called Treasure Hunt. And it's funny, you look at the list here, like the judges on it are like some fairly well-known text adventure developers. You know, the Scott Adams is a judge, not Dilbert Scott Adams, but the text adventure creator, Scott Adams. And then people made a lot of, some of these are like, they're from like European, because you see ZX Spectrum games. So some of their games I'm not familiar with, but he was the one I knew right away on the list. And then I've heard of a few of these other judges. But yeah, the idea is you create a text adventure. They say no in-game. There's a little debate. Like the article has a screenshot with some pictures. The rules basically say there's no graphics other than a title screen.
Okay. And, so you can't do like wizardry type stuff where
yeah
you show a bat, yeah, you know, pictures.
Yeah, and they show you like some examples. I don't think they really care about how you implement it.
What's the date here? I see February 6th, but I can't tell if that's a start or an end or...
Opens, submissions are open February 5th at 6 p.m. until March 4th.
Okay.
So obviously you would start working on it now if that's a thing you wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah, text adventures sound like they'd be quick to code, but they really aren't.
Yeah, because you have to think, it's, again, I just want my own experience. Like, you have to think, like, what would someone type in and what would, you know, you want to give them back. So if you're not good at, like, describing everything in the environment and anticipating how people might use the various verbs they're given, it's really, really tough. So the Amico, the Intellivision Amico, this past week released some footage of their Night Stalker remake. Are you familiar with Night Stalker on the Intellivision?
Yes, and this looks like an incredible remake.
It kind of, my first impression was it was giving me a migraine because there's a lot of flashing. But then I watched it again and thought, no, you know what? This actually looks pretty cool. Like the effects, I understand why they're doing some of the lighting effects in there because they help you find your character in the maze. But this is like a multiplayer version of Night Stalker. They've kind of picked up the pace a little bit. It made it look more like, kind of like a machine you would see at a Dave and Buster's. You know, like the kind of thing
yeah.
three or four people would huddle around and play. You're just basically endless swarm of robots in a maze. And you are you're battling them, but now it looks like you have like 360 degrees of firing, as opposed to just the four directions you used to have.
And if you know, you know, what the Amico controller looks like a iPad from the early 2000s, and it lights up, I'm sure it lights up in your color, and I'm sure you use the wheel to aim or shoot, you know. It seems like a perfect fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if Burger Becky helped code this one.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. And then it has different style mazes, too. It looks like there's, like, sort of boss fights as well mixed in. So I guess it reminds me a little bit of Pac-Man Championship Edition. It's kind of got that visual style and play style to it, you know?
Yeah, I like how they kept the running animation almost exact to the original. Other than you can... It turns the character in 3D instead of not like it did in the original. Yeah, pretty classy. Yeah. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I've been kind of on the fence about the system, and I still am, you know, just because it's a really tall order to pull off creating a new system. I'm really kind of still in wait-and-see mode. Like, I don't think I'm going to pre-order it. I guess I have to see what the final price and game library is, but I'm really, really curious about it. I mean, they have a decent team. I think they have people who are really taking it seriously. So...
And it seems like they're throwing money at it, you know, not just trying to, you know, get the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Hidden inside Frogger on PlayStation 1 is an unused Qbert level.
Yeah.
There's a YouTube channel that's kind of fun called Out of Bounds, and he uses some sort of tool and or emulator on his PC to move the camera wherever he wants within video games. And mm-hmm. In this one, he finds a Qbert-inspired level in the PlayStation Frogger game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so unfinished, you can't tell if it was a tech demo or a way they kind of load tested the hardware. But it's unfortunate because it would have been a really cool level. You know, there's a lot more he finds in here, like unused 3D sprites and stuff like that. But yeah, that would have been a cool tie. And I wonder if they couldn't get the licensing or something, because I don't think it was.
Yeah, they were
developers.
Different companies for sure. But yeah, it could have just been an experimental level too. I mean, you see other kind of boundary breaking bugs. I mean, the earliest we probably all encountered was the section of Metroid that you could get to by doing the wall jump,
mm-hmm.
which was a couple corridors and nothing particularly interesting. I don't think there was like even a missile pack up there. I think it was just purely
some
just unfinished corridors.
Yeah,
and I assume that's the first one of these kind of bugs most, you know, people around our age encountered.
I feel like everyone that had a PlayStation had this game.
Yeah, I have this game, and I don't even remember buying it. So I'm wondering if it just gets, like, delivered to your house if you own a PlayStation.
Yeah, your PlayStation just births a Frogger game upon arrival.
Yeah, because I really have no recollection at all of buying Frogger, but I definitely have it.
And I don't think it's a bad game either. A lot of people dumped on it, but yeah, I was always fine with it. It was what it was. But this is kind of an unplanned glitch section of our news, the Frogger Cuber part. And this amazing glitch puts Star Fox 64 ships in an unmodified Zelda cartridge.
Yeah, so this is a arbitrary code execution bug where using, I guess, the character name on the save file, you can insert code. And I think there's more to the glitch than just that. But you can essentially cause the game to just run whatever code you enter into it. And doing that, they were able to, I guess, paste some bits of Star. I don't know if the ships were already hidden in the game or whatever. But yeah, this thing where these Star Fox ships come out and just try and kill Link.
Yeah. This is in, I should say this is in Orcana of Time.
Mm-hmm.
I read this article, I watched the whole video, I still don't get it.
Yeah, so I saw something about it, which was how this glitch was used to warp directly to the end credits screen from kind of the beginning, which, you know, sort of minimally qualifies as a speed run. But mm-hmm. it shows, did you see the picture of the Nintendo 64 controller that they used to trigger the glitch? You got to go down to the gallery at the end. So he basically has a series of rubber bands to forcibly hold down two buttons, the up button and one of the C buttons, C left, and then hold the joystick into a specific position. So I guess then you can... I mean, I guess you could do that by hand too, but if you also have to hit other buttons, then it's kind of a pain. So yeah, this is the controller setup for this glitch.
That's crazy. I'm fast forwarding through here now. And I realize I totally mispronounced Ocarina before.
I don't know what the official pronunciation is.
And here's the deal for all our listeners. I'm not as big of an idiot as I sound in our podcast, but the second, like, I'm on a video game podcast, but like the second someone asks me a question or a microphone turns on, you could just say to me, like, name any video game. Just name a video game, and I wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
You know, it's just what happens.
So what you should do is you go to the Renaissance Fair this summer and you ask them for the correct pronunciation of Ocarina.
That's a good idea. But yeah, so this one's a bit above me. Unplanned emulator news. A new PlayStation 1 emulator, well, a mod of it, I guess, a version of it, Beetle PSX, Dynarec is what it's called. So Dynarec is the version or mod of the Beetle PSX emulator. The reason why this is big news is that they updated the code so it can compile on any kind of CPU and use the CPU's, you know, specific instruction sets. So before, you would have to code or edit this emulator for, you know, specific ARM CPUs or specific MIPS CPUs, or there is one for the x86 or AMD 64. And so this is going to make it a lot easier. A reason why this is cool is, you know, the, for example, the Raspberry Pi 3 and the 4 have different chips on them. You know, other than being faster, the 4 Raspberry Pi 4's chip has like more FPU instruction sets. So if you compile this on the 4, you'll get to use those. You know what I mean? It's compiled for that. And I guess you could get some really big speed upgrades or speed improvements on your PlayStation emulation.
Yes.
So
they were
showing, this was a great article.
Yeah, on here they show Final Fantasy VIII running at like 400 frames per second, which is a little crazy. But then they also talk about you can lock games into a frame rate. So if there are games that, you know, lag or, you know, get, you know, visually kind of glitchy, you can actually correct that. You can just say like they use the example of Tomb Raider 3, you can lock that into 30 frames per second, which I guess is what the game is trying to do. But in some spots it slows down, but you can actually lock it so it never experiences a slowdown.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I think, so you could get perfect emulation in theory.
Well, it's not perfect emulation, right? It's because perfect emulation,
lag free.
Because perfect emulation would be you're experiencing the exact same behavior you would on real hardware.
Yeah, yeah.
But here they're saying we don't want the same performance as real hardware. We want these games to always play at the speed the developer designed them to play at.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Speaking of that, you know, the PlayStation 5 is supposed to play, you know, all backwards compatible games that, all the way back to 1. So, I mean, that's the rumor, but it'll be interesting to see if they keep it to exactly how it played or if they upscale it or if you could choose between the two.
Yeah, so here's where I'm skeptical of that PlayStation 4 backwards compatibility statement. Because, like, my definition of backwards compatibility would be I can take a disc that I already own and put it in the PlayStation 5 and it plays. And I really think Sony's definition is you can go into an online store and repurchase that game for full price.
I think they're being forced into this because you can use original Xbox games and an Xbox One. Well, many of them, not all of them.
Yeah, there's I remember there's like a set that doesn't work for whatever reason. And even like the PlayStation 2, there's a couple PlayStation 1 games that will not boot on the PlayStation 2.
Yeah, yeah. And then eventually they took out the backwards compatibility chip in the later PlayStation 2s.
Really? Because I have the slim PlayStation 2, and it still has backwards compatibility. Was there...
It goes to software or something.
Okay. Oh, there was a chip. I see. Okay.
Yeah. Now I'm sure listeners will write in and tell me I'm wrong for some way, which that's fine. I actually want to know what the correct answer is.
Yeah. Okay. I could see that. Because, I mean, I use... I usually use the PlayStation 2 to play PlayStation 1 games, even though I have a PlayStation 1 hooked up right next to it.
Of course, right?
Yeah. I guess cool. I should unhook one of them.
Get that space back.
Yeah. Well, I use a slim model for both of them, so it's really not taking up too much space.
In The rest of the emulated news, Laka Linux 2.3.2 game console distro released with the latest version of RetroArch. And the only reason why I wanted to add this in here was because there is a big focus on Neo Geo CD, and I know we have some Neo Geo CD listeners or fans that are our listeners, and also a new lightweight Nintendo Entertainment System core included on it. So, like, if you wanted to use your Pi Zero or something, you'll know it'll play perfectly fine. So, just a quick plug in there for them.
Cool. We have a couple things about game hoarding. One from Gizmodo, which is a pro game hoarding article called You Should Hoard Physical Copies of the Video Games You Love. And it's basically making the point that, hey, by the way, some of these online games, you know, games that you're basically getting from a online store, one day they might just go away, which we all know. It's probably happened to everybody here at some point. Like, some game you have either, like, is no longer, like, the developer no longer makes it available on the store and it won't play. Or the thing I've run into sometimes is, like, I get a game on Android and it plays great, and then Android does an update and changes their APIs and how the game doesn't work. And the developer then has to say, well, do I spend hundreds of hours trying to make this game that I didn't make much money on, or that I maybe have already thought I've sold every copy I can of, run on new hardware, or do I just say, sorry, because you're out of luck?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this recently happened with Tetris on iPhone.
Yeah.
EA lost the license. License went to someone else. So as of April 21st, you will not be able to play your current version of Tetris on your iPhone.
Yeah. So that's why this has actually been kind of my thought process lately, where I'm kind of going through my collection and thinking, okay, what are games I'm never going to play, and what are games I want to have physical copies of that I don't have physical copies of today? So that's been kind of something that's been on my mind lately. What I haven't had is the time to actually go on eBay and start selling stuff.
Yeah. Oh, selling on eBay, that ages me. It's almost never a good experience.
Yeah, I just, what else am I going to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you could bring them to a GameStop and get 30 cents for your whole collection.
Yeah, but I mean, if you bring, like, ESPN teaches you how to hit a golf ball for 3DO to GameStop, they won't even give you 30 cents.
Yeah, they don't want it, even though it is worth money, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, because apparently those are rare. I know why they're rare, because nobody bought them in 1996 and stores threw them out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. So what else? What every Nintendo 64 game in one pile looks like.
So this is on screenrant.com, and it's just some dude has all, how many Nintendo 64 games are there? 297 games. He has a picture of all of them. Organized in a nice stack, and that's what they look like.
With printed labels, right? He had to print, because Nintendo 64 games don't have these nice labels that he has on every single game.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
I've actually thought about buying a set of those, because my loose Nintendo 64 games, it really is a pain to find the game you want to play.
I believe it. Yeah. Yeah. I think I only have like 8 or 9 games left, so I don't have that problem.
Oh.
But, this article got me thinking about the library of Nintendo 64.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was my favorite system for the longest time. Who knows? It still might be. But I think the thesis for me of this system is it has an amazing collection of games, and it has a lot of shovelware, and all of that in only under 300 games. You know what I mean? Like, the number of shovelware it has and the number of amazing titles is pretty amazing for under 300 games.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe one RPG among that whole pile, but that's why I like the Nintendo 64. Most of my loose game collection are racing games and WWF games, because they made a ton of pro wrestling games for the Nintendo 64.
Oh, yeah.
And they made a lot. Like, this is the era when I think polygonal racing games were, like, good. Like, I know PlayStation had Ridge Racer and Demolition Derby and some others. You know, there was good stuff on the PlayStation 2. PlayStation also, I mean. But, like, the first wave of PlayStation racing games I thought were kind of, you know. Even the original Need for Speed, if you go back and play it, it doesn't age particularly well. But Nintendo 64 has a lot of stuff that really has aged well.
Well, for me, the Nintendo, I mean, it's a silicone graphics machine. For me, it's when 3D finally looked great. You know, I remember the first time I played Super Mario 64 before it was released in a Toy Story, one of those upright setups, you know, and I couldn't believe it. You know, I it was like a modern marvel to me. They finally did it. I was in 3D and in a 3D world, and I think that translated, you know, to the Star Wars games flying around, that translated, yeah, to all the racing games, and people dump on Nintendo 64 for not having a far depth of view, you know, the fog and all that stuff and the blurriness, but it looked better than PlayStation to me. And is that all of our news?
Is it? Yes. So I want to do as a topic this week, talk a little bit about our favorite TurboGrafx-16 emulators or other topics around that. I think this is fairly disorganized, but we'll figure it out. I was thinking about it because of your Game Club pick of Battle Royale, or Battle Royale, perhaps. In realizing I don't really have like a TurboGrafx-16 emulator, like a go-to emulator that I'm a big fan of anymore. Now, I own a physical copy of Battle Royale, so it wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
But this I was kind of in my mind because when I was doing this like a Sega Genesis demo, I thought at some point about doing like a TurboGrafx-16 port, right? Just to see if I could do it. And I wasn't really able to find like a debugging emulator, or at least not one that worked on Linux at all. So I'm kind of curious, like, what do you use? Are you happy with it? And so on.
Yeah. So, I mean, our listeners will not be shocked to know that I use RetroArch on the LibRetro version of the Beetle PCE Fast emulator. It's by the Mednafen team. I can't believe I said that correctly. It's probably the first time I said that out loud. Obviously, if you're playing a CD game, you need the System 3 BIOS in there. I use this to play, you know, CD games, HuCard games, and I've never had an issue with it. I've mentioned many times that I use Devil's Crush the first time I, you know, load up a RetroPie or a PC to kind of see how it's handling emulation, just because I know that game so well and how it feels. And this emulator is what I go to for it. It just feels perfect. It supports read-ahead latency reduction flawlessly. It also will play almost any kind of CD ISO. So you have your Q, your CCD, your ISO, your image, your bin, your CHD. And I use it on x86 too, and it's probably where it's compiled because it plays great. But yeah, what do you fall back to?
Well, you know, I'm going to go back. See, the problem I run into is like I occasionally like to do like maps and, you know, stuff for games. Like I've produced a couple of maps for games that are online. Most of my website traffic is probably people looking for maps for obscure games. And like when I do that, I have to go back to like an ancient emulator called Magic Engine. Have you used Magic Engine?
I think no, but I think you've mentioned it. It's one you paid or traded for.
Yeah, you have to basically, I got it so long ago, I don't really remember now. But, you know, you essentially give some guy in UK, you know, $20 and you get a license key for this emulator. And it's like the only emulator that has like disable layers that I found. You know, so like if you're trying to do a map, you can turn off sprite plane. It saves you a lot of time, right? Other than you have to know how to get through a game without seeing your sprite. But it means like screenshots. You can do all kinds of great screenshots and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's a commercial emulator and it's closed source and it only runs on Windows. There might be a Mac version too. I don't know. And at least according to some guides, like the emulation isn't perfect. I've personally found the emulation to be pretty good. But you know, it requires Windows 98 or higher with a Sound Blaster card. So
wow,
maybe not.
So it's not being updated.
It is not updated very often. And the site is still up. The guy runs, you've heard the guy that wrote it runs a monthly contest on his site. Like maybe he just figures he doesn't need to do anything else with it. Mm-hmm. Let's see. The last release was version 1.1.3, and that was released May 26th of 2008.
Wow. So over 10 years ago.
But if it's stable, then who cares, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I've been reading a little bit. Like, now when I do TurboGrafx emulation, my go-to is md.emu, which is the Android emulator. There's, like...
What do you play it on, then?
I play that on the Ouya.
Oh, yeah.
Where... It's weird that the developer for that sells it on the Play Store for like $3. But for whatever reason, they decide to make it a free game on the Ouya. Maybe, I don't know, maybe out of the kindness of their heart, maybe it has some bugs and they didn't feel right charging. I have no idea why it's free on Ouya, but was $3 on Android. Maybe they are doing it like a gateway drug. Like, you know, people that have the Ouya are more likely to then go buy the Android version too. I don't know. I actually haven't tried the Android version just because I don't like playing most games on my phone. There's some RPGs I can play on my phone, but I'm not even going to try an action game.
You need a controller. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I've been reading a little bit about this, like this emulator that's kind of a highly rated emulator called Otake, Otake, which is apparently a somewhat active and, you know, good quality emulator, but the sites, and like it started as a GeoCities page, I want to say, and the site's in Japanese, and the developer, you know, doesn't really speak English, so if you want to ask about like enhancements or bugs or something, you're not really going to get you're not getting a response, which is fine. I don't speak Japanese. I can't, you know, be critical of him, of course. So a lot of people say, like, this is the best one to use, except, you know, doesn't have a real friendly user interface. And this is what I run into with, like, the LibRetro or the RetroArch or Mednafen versions of PC Engine emulators, that they're kind of a pain to configure. You know, like, the md.emu, it's real easy. Like, here's your, you know, you set your system card, and then you open a bin file or you open, you know, a .pce file, whatever. And it just works. You're not messing around with stuff. You know, the Ouya is handling the controller configuration for you. You're not doing anything there. So I sort of like to get like, I would really like to have a dedicated TurboGrafx emulator. I realize I just like pre-ordered one. Hopefully that has some way to load other games on it. And if so, that'll become probably my go-to thing. But yeah, that's about it. I know MAME has a TurboGrafx emulator built in, but I have not tried it yet.
I have tried it, but not in a very long time. Wikipedia does rate MAME's accuracy as high for TurboGrafx.
Oh yeah, I believe it. I've used, like, I actually was using their 7800 emulator that's built into MAME, and I found that to be really good, but I also found it to be a complete pain to actually get started. Like, you have to know some really obscure command, and it's not like a normal, like, it's not intuitive how you get their console emulators to work.
I'm looking, the Mendefen stuff, I don't see any debugging tools like you were mentioning.
Yeah, and again, that's been kind of the deal breaker for me doing TurboGrafx development. Like, Sega Genesis, there's a lot of emulators that have debuggers built in. And TurboGrafx, I really haven't found a good one yet.
And I, for the longest time, I used my PSP to play TurboGrafx and stuff like that, which, again, that's Mednafen. But you know what? It all seems to work fine for me. If you're just going to hop in and play a game, almost all these work fine, you know. I did not know Hygen had one. They're supposed to be really, really accurate, but they're rated as a question mark on Wikipedia. Yeah, it's also rated as not recommended.
I mean, I guess I could spend $200 to get a Mister and just play it that way.
Yeah, then you know you're pretty perfect there.
Yeah, or what was that other, the Polymega? Was that the other thing that came out recently?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I think I'd stick with the Mister just because it actually is FPGA.
Yeah, the Polymega, is that actually out?
I don't know. Or did they just start accepting pre-orders?
Their something? Site says pre-order. It feels like this thing has been on pre-order for like the past, what, 70 years?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, want to talk about some Game Club picks?
So my pick was Battle Royale, released for the TurboGrafx in 1990, developed by Incredible Technologies, which I haven't heard of before. I'm looking around. I don't see much info online, but published by NEC. And yeah, it's definitely an interesting game. It's definitely a game of its time. I remember liking this game a lot more than I do now. Mm-hmm. I haven't played it in a very long time, and I do have this Hue card also. Yeah, it's a 5-player battle royale, and I guess you could use your Turbo Tap for that, but I just played solo against a bunch of other computer players. Yeah, you choose your player, and well, it starts out with a news conference, I guess, with a very busty blonde in 16-bit graphics. And I think the strangest part about this whole game is the first part of it, you play the manager of the wrestler, and you have to race the other 4 managers, there's 5 total, to get to the wrestler you want to manage, and you can like push each other over and punch each other to get there, which I think it's funny. I don't know why they did that, but it's kind of a nice touch. I don't like the play control in this. It's definitely phoned in. Yeah, it's a real shallow game, and the object really is to throw the other people out of the ring and be the last person in the ring. While you're not in the ring, you can kind of mess with other players that are out there with you. And the only other thing I have to say about this game is, the big graphics, you know, the in-between gameplay graphics are fantastic, kind of like most TurboGrafx games, I think. And the player design is hilarious. You know, it's very, again, a product of its time. Yeah, you have your mask guy, your I don't know, like 2 different Mohawk guys and almost a bigger sumo guy, but not quite.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all I have to say about this one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the sprites are very similar to the sprites from Time Killers, a game they also developed. So Incredible Technologies I'm familiar with. I've been to their office. They're based out of the Chicago area.
Oh, wow.
They were also responsible for Street Fighter the Movie, the arcade Street Fighter the Movie. That's not the thing they're most well known for. They also did Golden Tee Golf, which is any like pizza place in your town has Golden Tee Golf.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's probably going to be what they're always remembered for, because a lot of their other, they did a lot of other fighting games, but they were not really like huge fighting games. You know, Time Killers is kind of like a novelty game. It's a funny concept. It's very 90s because that's kind of like over the top 90s,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Comedy violence. They did a game called Bloodstorm that kind of, I it's actually pretty good. It gets dinged as being like a Mortal Kombat knockoff quite a bit. But this was their only TurboGrafx game. I don't know the history of how they came to do it. I could probably send some emails, maybe find out. I don't know. But I didn't really care for this game that much.
I thought I was going to recommend it, and I don't.
Yeah, as much as I like some of the other works of the company, I just didn't think it controlled very well. I thought the graphics were okay. The TurboGrafx can do some really bright, colorful sprites. They have like a lot of... the TurboGrafx has some like... I'm probably going to get this wrong, but it's something where like every sprite can be assigned a different palette. So you can have... If you have like 10 sprites, they can each have their own unique palette, which is why a lot of their games have really colorful, crazy sprites.
Just because they could.
Because they could, yeah. Yeah, and this is at least one example of that. But yeah, it's okay. I can't really recommend it. It's better than some other wrestling games of the time, I guess. You know, there were a lot of like kind of garbage pro wrestling games made around this era. Most of them, the controls are kind of slow and awful. And this, I think, was trying to do more of an arcade feel, which is really a better idea. Like, the best wrestling game of the 90s is probably WrestleMania, the arcade game. Because it's just stopped trying to be a pro wrestling game and decided to be an arcade fighter.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of what's going on here, but, you know, I just didn't think it was that much fun.
Yeah, yeah. Yours was much more fun.
Yeah, depending which version you played. So I went with Royal Rumble, which is airing the day that we're recording this. And I played the Dreamcast version.
Oh, wow. Huh. Yeah. That's a bold move.
It is, and it's a really good version. That game is, it's just a lot of fun. So it's a very arcade-style game. And, of course, I did the Battle Royal option. You can do anywhere from, like, 30 to 50 wrestlers. Now, they're not all in the ring at a time because there's some sort of cap. You know, there's at most eight wrestlers in the ring at a time. But they're huge. I mean, these are, like, huge sprites. There's really good level of detail. I mean, these things, it looks great. You know, it opens up with, like, real video footage from past WWF shows. And it has
It would have to. If you have a CD, you have to.
And then it has, you know, pretty good cast. So it's got, so there you go. There's up to 9 wrestlers in the ring at a time, according to the back of the box. So my estimate of 8 or 9 wasn't that far off. And there's a little over 20 wrestlers you can choose from in there. And it's pretty simple. And it plays kind of arcade style. So your character has like a health meter. And if you lose, you can continue and rejoin as a different wrestler. And then you're kind of graded by what your elimination streak was.
Really? That sounds really fun.
Yeah, and the controls are more arcadey than the typical wrestling game. You know, it's more, it plays like an arcade game more than like a, you know, WCW versus the world. You know, trying to be a grappling game, if that makes sense.
Does it use the VMU at all?
I did not even try that.
Or Rumble Pack?
I refuse to use Rumble Packs.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you are anti-Rumble.
I hate Rumble.
Pack.
I think it is one of the worst things ever added to video games. And of course,
next up is a Shock Pack.
Yeah, Shock Pack, exactly. Yeah, or Aroma Pack or some other equally bad idea. Yeah, and then like, you know, Nintendo does something evil, like make the Rumble Pack like an item in Ocarina of Time. Did you ever encounter that when you played Ocarina of Time, where it's like you get the item that's shaped like a Rumble Pack, and it makes the controller vibrate when you're near, like a secret or something?
I don't think I ever played it with the Rumble Pack.
Well, right. So then you have to buy the Rumble Pack to use the object that looks like a Rumble Pack.
Oh wow. Okay.
It's awful.
I don't even think I knew that was a feature or an item.
Yeah,
but I haven't played Ocarina of Time since it came out. It's on my short list of games to play soon again.
Yeah,
but probably on the 3DS.
Yeah, I was gonna say the 3DS remake solves that problem. So stick with the 3DS remake. But anyhow, yeah, the Dreamcast version to me, like I like some of the older console versions, but the Dreamcast version is by far the best.
I played the Genesis version and it was okay. It was definitely better than Battle Royale. My problem was my system was shocking to everyone listening. My system was acting up again, and this was kind of a hell week for me at work that I just got through. In fact, we're recording on a Sunday. I pretty much worked all weekend until now. I had a choice to either deal with the shortcomings at the time of my system and play the game, or fix the system and maybe not give the game enough time for this. So I just decided to play. And so I really didn't get the best experience, but good enough. Actually really good graphics. The sound I thought was lacking. I thought they could have done a lot more with that. And it was the play control on my system that was bad. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say anything negative about the play control of the game because it may have been my fault, you know? And again, this is one reason why I'm excited to get my basement finished so I could finally get out all my old consoles that have been in a box since I moved here. So a lot less emulation for me mm-hmm. after this episode, hopefully. But who did this one? Sculptured Software?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm seeing. I don't know it for a fact, but I know it for a fact, if that makes sense. Like, Sculpture did all these kind of... did a lot of games in this style.
And they also did Super Star Wars Empire Strikes Back, which, similar graphics. Yeah.
Yeah, now I can't actually tell who did the Dreamcast version, because it's one of those games that has, like, 9,000 company names when it boots.
That's funny. Cool. Any last words on it?
No, not really. I don't know how many more. There's not a lot of good pro wrestling games, so I'm not going to talk about a ton of them.
Yeah.
But these, yeah, I think most versions of Royal Rumble are pretty good.
Want to tease our new Game Club games?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Alien Syndrome, which is on almost every system. And I'm not going to say anything else about it until we play it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a game I just started yesterday, Breath of Fire for Super Nintendo, which is on the Nintendo Switch, if you do the Nintendo subscription.
$20 a year, yeah.
So it's one of the games on there. I had just finished the last RPG I was playing, which was on PS4, so I wanted to go back and play a 16-bit one, and in a week, maybe I will have made progress, or I will have rage-quitted. I don't know.
Well, cool. If any listeners play any of these games, or really any retro game that you want to talk about, please email us. Email at retrogameclub.net. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Alien Syndrome and Breath of Fire. And it looks like we have one listener feedback this week.
Yeah, Majors writes in about a few things. Freak Toys having a 3DO section, and something that you never see nowadays. That's true. I don't even know how they got 3DO games. I mean, they are... not near like a major city, so I'm wondering, there must have been some 3DO collector up in that area for them to have such a big because there's like just anecdotally, like the only stores that sold 3DO games were like GameStop and like Software Etc., that kind of stuff, and I think mm-hmm. the town that they're in, the nearest one of those stores might have been like an hour, you know, close to an hour away. He also wants to give us a thanks for the news piece that we do every week, because he doesn't really keep up with video game news outside of, you know, podcasts. And if you like podcasts with like retro gaming news, I also will always recommend the Retro Hour, because they do like a news segment too. And being like a European show, they tend to cover slightly different things, because if there's like any ZX Spectrum news, for example, that week, you are guaranteed to hear it on there.
And I do love that podcast a lot, among other podcasts. And I don't see when they mentioned, well, when one of their guests mentioned our podcast, one of their hosts said, you know, what do you listen to? What's our competition? And I don't see other retro,
yeah,
you know, a podcast is competition. There's more than enough room for everyone. It's just, it's fun, you know? And
I think that was a cheeky comment. I don't think
totally. but what I was gonna say is, when I listen to them and we already had a news item before them, part of me does say, you know, yes, we were first.
yeah going back to the email here. Another World Polygons. He said he first saw Another World on display at Software Etc. in the mall in the 90s. The store had an Amiga 500 and 386 to showcase new games. And Another World always looked amazing, and learning it was only 2 3.5-inch discs made it even more impressive. Unfortunately, he was never very good at it and felt it was sort of a Dragon's Lair type mechanic. Which, it's an interesting analogy, because it is all sort of, it's a very timing-based game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not, the only way to beat another world is to memorize the exact timing of when to do everything.
Which is Dragon Slayer.
Which is Dragon Slayer, yeah. Alienware UFO portable PC. I like how you went straight to just look at the specs when talking about a new device. Like any true tech geeks would. Also really enjoyed the interview with Jason Moore. Looking forward to trying his Gen Medic game. He said, he has kind of a limited time set, so he wants to try and set aside a little bit of time each week to play a little 2600. Just like Jason mentioned, always trying to find a little time each week to do hardware projects. It compares it to, having basically setting aside 3 hours each week for a project like replacing old caps on arcade monitors. Which...
oh, that's a nightmare. Total nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a project I will never get into. And for some of our Game Club games, he has some feedback on Micro Machines. Just again, how it's really big in Europe. But for some reason, he never got into the style. And I think he says this because it was frustrating because you had to like basically memorize the road courses because they come up so fast. Like you have to memorize the track to be able to be good at the game. Which I was kind of trying to hint at it a little bit here. Like it scrolls so fast that it's just like, yeah. If you don't know the track ahead of time, you're gonna have a hard time with that game because it scrolls faster than the available screen.
Yeah. So yeah, hopefully each time you play it, you get better if you're paying attention.
I guess we asked on social media about some future topic
ideas.
Yeah, I'm just going to riff on these and we'll talk real quick. Gaming with Windows 3.1.
I love this idea. And it's been something I've been thinking about because I have a large collection of 3.1 Windows games, shockingly.
Yeah. So not launching DOS games from Windows 3.1, but games actually designed for Windows 3.1.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Which a lot of those still worked in Windows 95 and 98 and as they were intended, So, I still played a lot of those in that era as well. Yeah. What was the first game you played for more than 40 hours?
Okay.
That's a good topic.
I think anyone who got like an Intellivision or Atari and one game, it was that game.
I had an Apple II and Sierra Online games, so it was probably one of the King's Quests.
Yeah, I have to think about that. First or early PC game purchases and games you were excited about that were ultimately disappointing.
Oh, there are so many. But I love all those ideas.
And then one here that I like a lot, old video game magazines. There is very few things I enjoy more than reading an old video game magazine, especially the listener feedback, the reader email. It's not reader email, reader mail. And then like their predictions for the future. Anytime where it's like, oh, this new thing is coming out next month and we think it's going to be awesome. Or we think, whatever, like that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then like articles where it's like, here's some weird oddball piece of hardware. And then going through and trying to research if that thing actually ever came out and how much it goes for today.
Yeah. And there's tons of, not tons, but there's a few ads in Nintendo Power for games that just never got released.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you'll get like old joystick magazine. And it'll be like, here's a Atari 2600 controller, but you play with your feet. It'll be something like that. That's not a real product. I just made that up. And then going through and seeing like, are those on eBay? Who had them? That kind of stuff.
We could probably do a magazine episode like every season.
Oh, easily. Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoy magazines. All right. So thank you. If people want to send other suggestions, talk about Game Club games, whatever, how do they do that?
So preferred way to get read on our podcast is email at retrogameclub.net. And please play some games and tell us about them or, have some retro projects and tell us about them. And Zach, curates our Facebook and Twitter questions and answers. So he was the one that curated this list from your answers from Facebook questions. So if that's your preferred method, you will probably get on here. Zach just, it's not a if he likes your answer or not. It's a we all have jobs and families and copy and paste really quickly right. type thing.
And getting into that, if you've ever emailed us and we didn't read your email, you go ahead and email at retrogameclub.net again, because we probably just missed it.
Yeah. Sometimes I accidentally mark one as read before it's read. I think that's about it.
Yeah. So thanks for listening.